Hello and welcome to Oscar Mike Radio. My name is Travis, Marine Corps veteran and your host. Oscar Mike Radio sponsored by Joyce Asak of Asak Real Estate, Danielle Rocco of Echo 6 Creations, and I want to thank my supporters, Caisson Shaving Company, Exceptional Parent Magazine, and Fight Camp, Be Your Strongest Combination. I love stories like this, and when I say this, one of my guests, the two that you see with me, were on before, and then did all this crazy, cool, interesting stuff, and then brought back more guests to talk again. It's just like more equals more equals more. I love it. I want to welcome back returning guest Lauren Burns with a very special guest, Don Feeney. Both of you, welcome to Oscar Mike Radio. I'm looking forward to talking with you all.
Well, thanks for the offer. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me back again. I love being able to hang out with you, Travis. It's an honor to be on your show.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much. I mean, you came on for 4:30, folks. And, you know, this is, you know, when they say, you know, the truth is better than real life. Well, truth and real life were wrapped up in this show. And since then, Lauren, you started a podcast. You're crushing the podcast world. And now you've written a book about your story. And the book is Stolen. Yes. It's coming out September 8th. Miranda Lambert did the forward for it. Okay, I got to know. I mean, I blink my eyes and you go from podcaster to author, Lauren, and you brought friends this time. I can't keep up. Tell us how this all happened.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Well, about 2.5 years ago, I felt really God put it on my heart that, hey, it's time for you to share your story. The whole thing, from the kidnapping to the miraculous, amazing rescue, all the details. And the cool thing, Travis, is I and my mom, neither one of us knew all the details of the story until we got to do a reunion with Don and JD and Dave about a year ago in North Carolina. And man, I wish you could have been there, because sitting around in a little Airbnb around a dining room table eating and listening to the details of the story unfold, it was just amazing, all of the bits and pieces. And so that's why I launched Redeem Podcast. And with that podcast, I got to interview the guys that did my rescue. And then the book, like you just said, man, becoming an author is like a whole thing. It's a miracle. So any author out there listening, I'm amazed by you, because it is a crazy journey. But the book's out for pre-order and it'll drop in September 8th. And so here we are.
Here we are now. Now, how does, remind me again, and for the folks who don't know, how does Dawn figure into your story?
Well, Dawn is one of the reasons why I have a story. He is one of the men, a part of the rescue mission. He's one of the key pieces to the story. And Dawn will tell the story better than me. But he was the initial person that was contacted to say, hey, a little girl, 7-year-old, has been kidnapped from Dallas, Texas, and taken to Jerash, Jordan. The mother is frantic. She needs help. She's desperate. She'll do anything. And that's where Dawn entered the scene.
Dawn, do you still remember that day? Is it still clear to you as it is to Lauren?
Like it was yesterday. So I'm sitting in my office in Fayetteville, and my secretary gets on the line and says, Mr. Feeney, there's a guy on the phone by the name of Everett Alvarez, and he'd like to speak to you. Well, I don't know how much you know about POWs, but Everett Alvarez was listed as the longest held POW in Hanoi Hilton. Well, after I got done standing up at attention, I answered my phone. And I said, sir, how can I help you? And he said, well, Don, I got your name from a friend, which was Al Zapata. And Al was dealing with Kathy. And he says, I think that you guys may be able to do this job. But before I go any further, I want to tell you, this has nothing to do with the U.S. government. And I said, sir, if you're asking me to do it, what do you want done? I mean, the respect we have for him was tremendous. So he said, well, I'll come down and talk to you. It's about a little girl who was taken to Jordan and kidnapped and taken to Jordan, and we need to get her back. And I said, we'll come see you. He said, nope, I'm coming to you. So Everett shows up in my office, and I've warned Dave, who at that time was my partner, and J.D. Roberts, who was almost a on and off contractor for us. Me and J.D. were in Delta Force together, so we had a lot of relationship time. And he showed up and he briefed us. And I told him, you didn't need to come here. If you asked to get it done, we're going to do it. And he said, okay, well, let's make a plan. Then me and Dave went down and seen Kathy and started getting the information, came back, and we were looking at each other like, man, how are we going to do this? And that's how it started for our end.
It just, I remember reading about it in the Reader's Digest. That's where I first got with your story, Lauren. That kind of dates me a little bit, but that's the reality.
I have one on
And
my desk. A
okay.
couple of those copies.
Okay. And it seemed like something like, don't think it's the wrong way, Mr. Feeney, that the A Team would do, or it was some like Chuck Norris, movie in real life. Like these are real people who went to a foreign nation with no support behind enemy lines and got this done. And I have to know, what was it like when Lauren was returned to her mother and the mission was complete? I know we're getting a little ahead of things here, but I gotta know.
Well, for us, first of all, Dave is a Southern Baptist Christian. I'm a Brooklyn dyed-in-the-wool Catholic Christian, and JD was a medium Southern Baptist Christian. So we all had that in, we all had that in common.
Was he a backslidden Baptist?
Yeah, he was.
Okay.
So we all had faith that we can do things if it was given to us. That was the bottom line. So by the time we got back to the States, it's kind of like we knew we were going to get it done. There's no doubt. And we also knew that if we get caught, if we made it anywhere alive, we'd be under the jail. So when we got back, it was kind of like, okay, that was kind of amazing, And then, of course, we went on to do more after that. But we've done probably eight hostile recoveries, like Lauren, and then we actually lost count of ones where we con. Like Judy's an operator; she's done two or three operations where she was a team leader. My wife, in South and Central America.
Wait a minute,
So,
your wife is part of the business and
oh yeah, she. She was on Lauren's op. She was a support network. She was going to try to make it today, but she couldn't do it. She was a support network because you have to have a support no matter what you do in a mission. You have to have comms, you have to have support, and you have to have the operators on the ground. Well, she was the one outside the U.S. coordinating everybody because, well, like I said, we'll get into more later. Dave was in Jordan. Me and JD were in Israel trying to figure out how we're going to come across the border. And I don't know if you want me to get into that now or you want to wait till later.
Sure.
All right, so there's a we had a I had done production security for Rambo 3 and Iron Eagle 2. So we had some really good contacts initially. One was a man by the name of Colonel Digley. He's passed on now. So he says, okay, I know you want to get this girl out of Jordan, so tell me how you're gonna do it. So I gave him my version. We're gonna go out, we're gonna snatch her, we're gonna do this, we're gonna come across the Israeli border. He goes, oh, really? He says, come with me. So he takes us out to the Israeli border and he puts us on this hilltop. And of course, soldier boys show up and then they see Diggly and they start saluting him. And he says, okay, let me explain something to you. And he goes through everything. I don't go through all that's the tank traps. This is the this, this is the that. And then he gets really close to me and he smacks me in the chops, go, so now, how are you going to get across the Israeli border? I said, well, sir, I guess you're going to tell me. And that's how we linked up with Colonel Diggly. So he had me over his house that night. And I got to meet every first there was in the Israeli, the first tank commander, the first fighter pilot, and they were all in the meeting. And he told them everything in Hebrew what we were doing, and they're all sitting there scratching their head, and they're all talking, and I can't understand a word they're saying. And then one guy says, "Only way, Allenby Bridge." And I looked at Diggley like, "What's the Allenby Bridge?" He said, "I'll talk to you about it later." So that's how we got the idea. And as you know, what's the first thing a sniper plans? His escape.
Yeah.
Okay. First thing you plan is your escape. So while Dave was in Jordan looking for Lauren, me and JD were planning the escape routes to cross the Allenby Bridge. And so as you asked me about the end of it, at the end, it wasn't anticlimactic, but we were just glad that we got away with it. I mean, to be honest with you, we knew the odds were totally against us. I mean, But we all had faith that it was going to get done, and we all just thought we were good enough to do it, to be honest with you.
You mentioned technology, and you would think that with no technology, there's no social media, there's no this, there's no that, that it's like finding a needle in a haystack. How did that work?
So I say so me and Dave, me and JD went to Israel to plan what we're going to do. Diggley straightened us out really quick, Colonel Diggley. And then later on, Dave went into Jordan and he's walking around Jerash. Now we had sat with Kathy in Texas and got all the information, all the proofing of what how where she was at to the best of her knowledge. Well, it turned out to be an issue, of course, because her
My
she
poor
was
mom.
Yeah, she was like, I think this is the house. I think that's the house. And then so Dave is wandering around. Now, part about Dave at the time, he fit the bill. He's not a dark guy, but he tanned up a little bit and he dressed in a complete getup hood and he had a goatee and he was older. And when he was all covered up, he looked a lot older and he wore really baggy, whatever they call the men's dress they wear. So he didn't look that big, but he was Dave was a bear in a human costume, okay? And he was a big boy. So he covered up and he walked around that place for I gotta say 10, 11 days at least while me and JD were doing different plannings and getting from different locations. And he could not find Lauren. And he said, boys, I need help. So he said, okay, we're done. We think we have a good idea how we're getting across. We got to do a few things with Kathy. We call Kathy up, and that's where Judy comes in because Judy was in touch with Kathy and talking to us. And then Kathy came over to Cyprus, was it? I think we brought her to Cyprus.
Cyprus.
Yep. And she linked up with one of our other operators, and we kept her there while me and JD were running around Jordan. And Cyprus was talking to Judy, and then I was talking to Judy, and we had that link going. And then we said, okay, we've got to bring Kathy in to get this location because now Jerash, Jordan is not a big place. And we were there, the streets weren't even paved. I mean, we used to see people jumping out of the way. We thought that maybe they were jumping out of the way because they were afraid they get hit by cars. No, they were jumping out of the way because they knew where the potholes were and where the water was, and they didn't want to get splashed. Okay, so it's that kind of a city, town. And then of course, up on the hill is all the ruins. So from the ruins, you could look down into the town. So I don't know how far you want me to get into it,
No,
but
keep going, keep going, keep going.
okay. So we show up with Dave and me, Dave and JD are now running around. Now, my claim to fame is I can blend in a crowd of two when I have to. Okay. I'm originally from Brooklyn, New York, and I lived around all nationalities. I grew up right on the waterfront. Right, matter of fact, I walk out my house, turn left, and I stared at the Statue of Liberty going to school. The waterfront was right there. And we had Arabs, we had Puerto Ricans, we had blacks, we had Haitians. And I was a butcher as a kid, so I got along with all of them because they all liked me because I cut their meat for them. And I actually started working as a butcher at the age of 12, so I was there from 12 to 17. So I knew a lot of the customs of the Arab customs. We had an avenue we called we used to call it the Egyptian Street, but it wasn't. It was mainly Jordanians, Egyptians, and everybody. And we used to make their sausages for them. Anyway, long story short, so I was really good at counter-surveillance and surveillance. And with my old unit, I did a lot of that also. JD was a little harder to hide because he was so well built. JD was a solid guy. He was like, he was the kind of guy we're running surveillance. Like, okay, JD, I'm going to do this. JD, you're staying in the freaking car, okay? Until we need help, okay? You're the biggest guy. You're the ones with the arm. And he was also good at hand-to-hand. He was like a black belt in karate. And I said, if I'm getting beat up really bad, then you come save me. If not, I'm going to try to run and get in the car. We're going to drive off. So we had JD and me and Dave now in Jordan. We finally said, we got to call Kathy. So we brought Kathy in and we dressed her up, put her in the car, and we drove around for a while. And then all of a sudden, Kathy sees the car, her ex's car. And the dummy still had Texas plates on it. We're positive it wasn't there when Dave was walking around because it's the minute she seen it, we went, Texas plates, how the hell we miss it? Found that later, he had it someplace else, but it was there. So then now we found the house. Now we have to figure out how we're going to find Lauren because in that town, the kids did not run in the streets and play stickball or, you know, donkey or whatever you play. They didn't play none of that. They just stayed in the houses. So we figured out from Judy talking before Kathy came over that Lauren was in school. So we figured out how to get into school. We first thought that he would drive her to and from school. So we were trying to get a watching him, but he wasn't doing that. And then we started thinking about the school buses. So, and this is a part that was the amazing part. One day Dave says, "You know, guys, we need a little more prayer. So you guys get back to your room tonight. Let's do some heavy praying about this." So we get up the next morning, we go out and we're looking around and we're all
Now,
separated now. Dave.
just 1 second. One thing that talking with Lauren before, since and we talk off and on, through the course of a month, is the foundation of faith in her rescue in her life. At that time, it seems like your faith was very important to you. Catholic or not, Protestant or not, the faith was the foundation of your team. How key was your faith at that time? When doubt is creeping in, frustration's creeping in, you're in a different place. What was your faith like during that time?
Our faith, all of our faith at that time was very strong. I
Yeah.
mean, very. And we like Dave carried his Bible into Jordan,
Oh,
and
wow.
he would walk around with it when he was in the hotels and different places. I knocked on his door one time, and he didn't know who it was, and he answers his door, and he's got his Bible in his hand. I said, "You know, that may not be a good idea to answer the door like that. You may want to keep it inside." So we did have a lot of faith in what we were doing. And plus, we had a lot of confidence. I was a Delta operator. JD was a Delta operator. I spent 10 years in Delta. JD spent 9 to 10 years. I can't remember exactly what. We did a lot of things in our real life back then. And Dave was an intelligence operator, Air Force and Army. So we had a lot of knowledge, and we figured we could figure this out. So when we brought Kathy in, she zoomed in on the area, and then we left her back in the hotel, and we came back, and next thing you know, we said, "Okay, we're going to spread out today. We know she's going to school. We got there real early." And then we're watching these school buses, and the school buses, they're so afraid that their kids are going to be hurt by someone, they only stop with the school bus door next to the house. In other words, you can't get out across the street and cross over. They don't want the kids getting run over and becoming a pancake. So they only stop when the door opens to the house. So we're following these school buses, sometimes on foot and sometimes by car. And then one day, that day, Dave says, "All right, boys, let's go home back to the room tonight, get something good to eat. But how about picking up your prayer time a little bit?" So we did the next morning. We got out and we separated. And I can see JD, but I couldn't talk to him. He was about maybe a block away. And I can see his demeanor totally change. And then he starts walking toward me, and he starts walking, he's walking, he's walking a little faster, he's walking a little faster. Pretty soon, by the time he gets to me, he grabs me by the collar. We tell the story, he laughs his butt off too about it. And he grabs me by the collar, he says, "I seen those eyes." And I'm going, "JD, you're choking me out. Let me go." He goes, "I seen those eyes." And I'm going, Okay, calm down. You're drawing a little bit of attention here." I said, "Where?" He says, "On that bus that just went by you." I didn't see her at the time. But he said, "That's the bus." So we knew she was getting on a bus and going to school.
Because if Lauren, your whole face was not exposed, right? It was just your eyes.
No, we covered our hair. We didn't cover our face. And so I would cover my hair every day, but my eyes were the distinguishing feature because I have, you know, olive complexion skin and darker hair, but I have my mom's light bluish green eyes, and that was sort of the standout feature. And so that's what Don's talking about, is JD literally was standing on the street, looked into the bus window, and I stared right in at him, and we locked eyes, and that's how they found my location. And so all these years, you know, 38 years later, people compliment me all the time about my eyes, and it's a beautiful compliment. But I'm like, there is a story behind those eyes, you
Yeah.
know, it's more than a compliment. And that's a way that I get to share my testimony many, many times to people.
You see the eyes, and then you gotta get ready to do the recovery or extraction, whatever you call it, right? How
Right. So
how'd that go? Yeah.
we said, "Okay, now we know she's going to school. We know she's on a school bus. So what do we do the next couple of days?" We're following every friggin' school bus in town, right? We got two cars. We're like the Keystone Cops. Sometimes we cross each other, and next time we pass each other. And finally, we found this one bus. And I'm pretty sure I was the guy driving that day. And I think I had Dave in the car, and JD was driving the other car because we had two cars. And I said, "Dave, look at that bus. It just went by here, but now it's down at the bottom of the hill." So I zoomed down the bottom of the hill to try to catch it, and it goes down this country road. And I said, "Man, if this is her bus, this is a blessing." And we watched it, and it goes up this road, and it does kind of a half U-turn, and these kids that are at the farmhouse get on the bus, and then the bus goes back into Jerash. And we seen Lauren on the bus and said, "That's her bus." We go, "Okay, now we know when she gets on the bus, we know where the bus goes. Let's make a plan." And between us, we made a plan that was very simple when you get down to it. Now, you got to keep in mind, in the meantime, me and JD are driving back and forth to Allenby Bridge. And that's when it was real important to have Kathy in country, because in order to get Lauren and Kathy out of the country, we had to have a pass for the Allenby Bridge. So we talked to some of our contacts. They told us where to go would be the easiest place to get this pass. And then Kathy had to put her Academy Award winning act on to talk this guy into it. And I was supposed to be the uncle, okay? And we were going to take Lauren on vacation because the father was too busy working. And it worked. I mean, there was no getting around it. It was the grace of God that made it work, because we wind up getting a pass for me, Kathy, JD, who wasn't there, and Lauren on one piece of no two piece of paper, one for Kathy and Lauren, one for me and JD. And the guy gave it to us, and I kind of think he was a little memorized by Kathy's features, because Kathy was a beautiful woman. And we talked nice to him, and I told him how hard we've been working, and we gave the sob story. And even when he said no the first time, we didn't get mad. And Kathy was perfect. She said, "Oh, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to be doing that. We really need to get my daughter for vacation." And he signed two documents. And when that happened, we walked out of there like, "Thank you, Jesus, because there's no other way you're going to get that without that kind of luck." And Kathy did a great job talking to this guy. And like I said, I think he was a little mesmerized by her, number one. And then two, we walked out of there with the papers. Now, me and JD have been driving back and forth to the Allenby Bridge, and we knew every checkpoint. And we knew the cops sometimes. And then one time, a guy would say, "Hey, can you give me a ride to the far checkpoint?" "Yeah, we'll go in there." We weren't going there. We'd give the guy a ride. So it was like, "What are you?" "Oh, we're working. We're doing some working. We're doing this. We're doing that." And we give some kind of story, whatever it was. They believed us. And of course, we always bring cigarettes because they all smoke. And me and JD, neither one of us smoked, right? At one time, JD was a tobacco chewing guy, but he gave that up. So we're sitting in these cars. Sometimes these guys were smoking like chimneys. Windows rolled down, no air conditioning going on. We couldn't take it. But we got to know them all. So they got used to seeing us. And we made sure we drove the same car. We had a red car and a white car. Okay. So we always drove the white one. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was the white one. I have to go back and check my notes. But so they see us coming. We talk to them. And of course, we make believe we're trying to learn Arabic. And my language barrier is double zero, you know. Even when I was training in Spanish, my granddaughter picks on me now because she hears my great granddaughter. She heard the story about the guys coming to me, saying, "Mr. Don, you must do us a favor." "What's that?" "Your Spanish is so bad. Please speak English." So, so every time she hears me try to say something in Spanish, she goes, "Remember what they told you." So we would do that and get friendly with them. And that was part of the scam that we started running. And then we made reservations for Lauren and her mother on an Air Jordanian flight going out about the same time that we were going to make the hit. So let's say we made the hit at, I guess it was like 8:30 or something in the morning, 8 o'clock early. And we made reservations for her and Lauren at the airport at 12 o'clock. Okay. So then we were like, "How are we going to do this?" So me and JD looked at each other. Well, there's only one way to do it. We got to hijack the bus. Okay, how are we going to hijack the bus? Well, we started thinking, if we actually hijack the bus and take it somewhere, then we could be charged with actual kidnapping and we might be extradited to the United States from the United States. So we said, okay, let's not hijack the bus. Let's just like commandeer it. So what I did was we followed the bus. We made sure, first of all, we made sure Lauren got on the bus from her house, and then we followed it. And when he went to make the U-turn, we had me, JD, and Kathy in the car. Kathy was all covered up. And I said, oh, here's what we're going to do. When he makes that U-turn, I'm going to pull out in front of him and say, hey, you speak English? I'm lost. I'm a tourist. I need help. And the guy at the first couple of seconds, he was like, oh, you speak English, but you must move. You must move. And that gave me enough time to get close enough to the window of the bus to reach through the window and grab him by the throat and jerk him halfway through the window by his shirt. Meanwhile, Kathy and JD were getting out the other side of the car, so he really didn't see him. And they ran around to the door. JD, of course, kicks the door in, okay, the folding door for the school bus. And I think, Lauren, you seen your mom before she got on the bus, didn't you? Didn't you look through the window?
She went to the window. She saw me and she tapped on the window. And I remember this vividly, looking at her. And that's when, and y'all prepared my mom for this. I went into immediate shock
Jack.
because I remember looking at her thinking, it looks just like my mom, but how can it be my mom? My mom's in Texas. And at this point, I didn't think I'd ever going to see her again. And so I froze. She was motioning for me to get up and come to her, but I wouldn't. So she followed JD behind him and got on the bus to go and get me while JD was dealing with the bus keys.
Yeah, JD then come in, and then what we didn't know was there was a maitre d', but it was a woman. And the maitre d', when Kathy came in the bus, the maitre d' was like screaming at us, didn't know what was going on. I had the driver by the stack and swivel halfway out the window. JD reached in and pulled the key out of the bus and passed me the key. And then we heard some commotion, and it was Kathy smacking the oven daylights out of the maitre d'. She gave her about two good whacks and backed her up, and then jumped in Lauren's arm, and her and JD went out the bus. And then we all jumped back in the car. But before we jumped in the car, I took the key, once again, thinking we don't want to get tried for kidnapping. And I just threw it as far as I can. It had a little thing on it, so it was a pretty good throw into the weeds out by the farm. So we knew it would take them a while to find it. And this was all in the plan that we had. So we took the car and we drove back towards Jerash. Meanwhile, Dave was down at the bottom of the hill with the other car. We had the white one, he had the red one, whichever way, but that was it. And then we all swapped. Dave took, of course, we muddied up the license plates a little bit, not a lot, because all the license plates over there were muddy. But we didn't want to look too obvious. We muddied them up a little bit so they didn't have an exact license plate, but they knew it was a white car. And they knew there was two dudes in it, two white boys in it, and when they were looking for us, that's who they were looking. Well, we swapped cars, and we got in Dave's car, and Dave, I would talk bad about him if he was here today, so I can say this. I told him, get in that damn car and head straight to Jordan, okay? Dave, with his security mind, was thinking, okay, I got to stay behind a little bit in case something goes wrong. So me and JD jump on the other car, and we now head towards the Allenby Bridge. Okay. We didn't know Dave didn't go straight back to Jordan. We found out later. So we get through the checkpoint and they see us. Now we got Lauren, we got Kathy, we got JD and me, and this guy still asks for a ride. Ah, Mr. Don, Mr. JD, how are you? I need a ride. Yeah, okay. JD, get in the back. So JD jumps in the back with Lauren, and Kathy's got Lauren kind of hidden. She don't, and of course we're talking the daylights at him, so he's not paying attention. Of course, we give him cigarettes and he starts smoking and that take up thing, let him off, and then we get to the Allenby Bridge. And we get to the Allenby Bridge, and our contact is there, and he said, it's all set. My cousin works here. You got your passes, you got your passport, and you got the bakkish, of course. So we paid the money, gave him the passes. And of course, this guy was him hawing around, taking his time, and we're waiting and waiting. And I knew we had a deadline. So finally, I walk up to him and smiling. And I said, The movie has it a little bit not too real, and I won't use the words I said to him, but I said, 5 minutes, 3 minutes. I said, three. I held it up. I said, see that? Three. One, two, three. To get on that bus, get it started, and get on this bridge. We have somebody waiting over there for us to pick us up. And if we miss that time, you're gonna get your ass kicked. Okay. So, oh no. We just paid them like $800 to take this. So we could be a little forceful. We get on the bus, all of us, and it starts chugging along. And I tell you what. This bus had to be a V12 squirrel bus. It had to run by squirrels because it would making all kinds of noise. It was chattering. And then it starts slowing down. And then he pops the clutch and gets it running again. And we get to where the Jordanian side of it is. The Allenby Bridge has a Jordanian and the Israeli. And me and JD already said, if anything goes wrong, we're pulling the knives out, going to work, and we're running across whatever it is. Screaming in English that we're Americans to the Israelis. Hopefully, me and JD will go first, and Lauren and Kathy will follow us, and they won't get shot. All right. And he stops, and these two guys get on the bus, and of course, they're the security guards, and they're looking at everything, and we're all sitting there, and got Kathy and Lauren in the back, and me and JD. JD's sitting right by the driver because one of our plans was throw the driver out the door and drive the bus across. So we had a little alternate plans, and all violence that would have had to take place. Nothing was needed. The guys came on. They looked. They must be getting part of $800. They said, "Oh, you're the Americans. Yeah, we're going on vacation. You guys want to come with us?" You know, no, we don't go to Israel. We stay over here. Okay, good. And then the bus cleared off to the Israeli side. Meanwhile, Dave, who was supposed to go straight to Jordan, waited, and now they know the bus driver makes it back to Jerash, and he's screaming and hollering. Of course, we left him a little note to give to Ali. It says, and it said something. What exactly did it say about the eyes of Texas?
My mom wrote, "The eyes of Texas are upon you. Don't ever try to get Lauren back again."
And I told the driver, "I'm glad you understand English." Where I had him, because I had him halfway out the window. I said, "You tell Ali that if we have to do this again, we're going to do it with him. He's not going to make it out alive." And the driver's eyes got about big as silver dollars. And by that time, JD dragged him back in the bus, drug him off the bus, and then we got everybody in the car and did what I just told you. Well, Dave, because he's so far behind schedule, is driving down the road in this car that was seeing the bus. And now here you got me, 5'10", 180 pounds. And Dave sits out of the car, 6'1", 240 pounds, goatee, gray hair, you know, and he gets out and they're stopping his car and they got, so he got him surrounded. They got caught and he just breaks out a Snicker bar and starts eating a Snicker bar and starts offering him a Snicker bar. And they're searching the car and they're searching the car and he's going, "What are you guys doing?" And of course, they're not speaking English, but he knows what they're doing. They noticed the car and he wasn't far enough away from Jerash to make it. So he gets he's standing there and they're all searching. Now they're searching him, they're searching the car. It's the same color car, it's the same model. They don't have a license plate, so they can't tell. The next thing he hears on the radio is Queen Ali Airport. And they have found out about the reservations for Kathy and Lauren. So they drop everything, left him right in the middle of the road, drop everything, and they take off to Queen Ali. Dave, being smart now, he is a smart guy. He gets right behind them and follows them to Queen Ali Airport because that's where he goes. When he gets to the airport, he goes in, he tells the guy, "What's the next plane you got leaving?" The guy says, "Where do you want to go?" He says, "You're not listening to me, are you? What's the next plane you got leaving?" And he got on it. And right after that plane took off, they shut the whole airport down.
Wow.
And they shut down Queen Allenby Bridge. By that time, we're in Israel. JD sees a party of, and he starts talking because JD is the kind of guy that could talk to a fence post and get an answer. And he's talking to this black crowd is there, and he just assumed that it was a Christian missionary thing, and it was. So he gets over there, and it was a Christian missionary tour, and he gets around and starts telling them. And then next thing you know, they're singing praises and marching around us, and the checkpoint are looking at him, going, "What the hell is this going on?" Finally, we tell him, we just recovered this girl. She was kidnapped from America, and we're bringing her back. And then we made it back from there.
You do all this, and I guess one of the things I'm trying to connect, Lauren, is we go from this successful outcome. You're back with your mother. How did the Reader's Digest movie get made? I didn't
Well,
really thought of.
it was international news. I don't know how media finds things out, but we were hiding, and Don and I talked about this before. My mom had so much guilt of not reaching out to them after the rescue to say thank you for what you did. And Dave even said this to me. It was like, people that we've helped, you don't go back to your trauma. You hide. We changed our last names. We were living in hiding. My mom had no money to even pay rent at this point. We moved so many times, and I write about all of that in the book. But here we're trying to hide, and the media is finding us. The media was reaching out to all of my family members in Florida, asking for any photos of us. And so, however, it was just international news on every newspaper and magazine. And so NBC is who produced the movie in the 90s, and it came out in 1993, Desperate Rescue. But I'm not sure how everyone found out. My mom started sharing her testimony later, like on the 700 Club and Inside Edition. And I know Don did a lot of interviews as well. And like Don was saying, these are the cool things I did not know until we did our reunion. I was the first kid for them to ever rescue.
Well,
And
first
then I don't
child,
know if it
wow.
was Don. Yeah. And I don't know if it was Don or Judy, but one of them were telling me that one of the children they rescued changed their first and last name. And the young girl, oh, sorry, changed her name to Lauren after me.
Yep.
I had no idea to have that kind of impact, you know? So, and to hear that they rescued several other children after mine. But to answer your question, I'm not 100% sure, and Don might know
I can
more
tell you.
of how the movie was made. Yeah.
I can tell you real easy. We thinking, once again, not knowing, because we didn't know about international law that well, but we had spent a lot of time overseas. So we knew a lot about international and how the locals were not going to cooperate with us unless you paid them good money. We didn't have a lot of money either, but we had some. But we, one of the dumbest things we ever did, we actually went to the State Department and wanted to talk to someone about help. What can you do? And they have tried to make a health and well. You never had a health and welfare inspection, did you, from the State Department? You had one, right? Didn't the
Yeah.
State Department show up at your place once, Lauren?
Oh, I don't remember. My mom would have to answer that
Okay.
question.
So we went there, and this is in the movie exactly how it happened. This guy is telling us that we're not going to help you. As a matter of fact, if we find out who it is, we're going to tell the father because that girl is a Jordanian now. She's Jordanian. And I'm like pounding on the glass. I was an ARSO a temporary ARSO for the State Department one time. I'm expecting the security guys to come drag me out any minute now. Dave grabs me by the collar and says, we need to leave now because I wanted to grab this guy and pull him through the window. So we left there.
Because wait a minute, isn't Lawrence technically an American citizen?
Yeah, but they State Department don't see it that way. If she is with the father, he has control of her. And they would notify her.
And this is happening in Jordan. The part that Don's speaking about, this was happening in
Okay.
Jordan.
I
And
understand.
that's how the word got out, because the minute they did
Oh.
it, the father called the embassy screaming at them. They then realized these two idiots who showed up a couple of weeks before were talking about something like this. So they immediately sent out an apology press letter, okay? And it hits the wires. We had camera crews outside our office hiding across the street in the bushes because we wouldn't talk to anybody, okay? We weren't that savvy on how we could have used the news media. And it wasn't like it is now. So we just kept away from them. And they finally they went over the world. And that's how everybody found out about it.
So all this time passes and you bring her back home. She's with her mother. Life changes in several different ways, Lauren, as we discussed. And Don, we were talking before we came on, recorded that, you're doing this, doing that. You're not slowing down at all. Why write the book now, Lauren? What prompts you to say, you know what, I want to write this book now at this part of my life?
Well, one, and like you said, it's been 38 years later, right? And it's not anything I ever thought I would do ever. I never thought I was going to be, have a podcast and speak publicly. But 2.5 years ago, God put it on my heart. It's time for you to share what I did, not just the NBC movie drama, and to share the healing journey. And for anyone that's gone through trauma, you can't share your story until you can speak from a place of healing, or it comes across so sideways. And so my story, yes, it's about the kidnapping and this miraculous rescue, but it's also a story of the healing of the father, I call them father wounds, of the trauma, the questions of why was my childhood such a hot mess? Why did my father do this? Why did I grow up without knowing my father? There's, and not knowing my last name and moving, the loss of identity, just the layer upon layer, and the struggles I went through high school and college. And I write about all of that. The reason I write about it and I share about it is because I want to encourage others that there is hope and there is healing on this other side of brokenness. And so that is the heart of the story. It is an amazing, miraculous rescue. I get to honor the people that, they sacrificed their own lives to come and save me. But I'm also talk about scripture verses and how God healed me and walked me through all of that. I reconnected with my father after all this several times over the phone, in person, when it was safe. And I talk about all of those things.
Don, you have done this for not just Lauren, but other people, but I don't think they've ever written a book about, their side of the story. What was it like for you to see this book and the podcast and her outreach about this come together?
Well, when she talked to us about it, and she the first thing she said was, I want to write this to help other people. Well, what do we do? That's what we did. And
Yeah.
then we realized how close of a Christian she had become, stronger and stronger in her own ways. We thought it was a great idea, and we were happy to hear it. And we said, anything we can do, we'll do to help you.
I don't know how closely you all have been in contact over the years, but how is it now, Don? You've seen, Lauren's not doing this to make money or to put her name in lights. It's more of a ministry, and you have said that your faith figured into her recovery and your work after her. What's it like seeing that ministry come together at this point in her life?
Oh, well, to be full honest here, I had a lot of faith when we were doing that. Okay, I lost it for a little bit, and then I came back. And I came back, and then a couple of years later, Lauren's making contact with us and talking about this. And to me, it was just absolutely amazing. I mean, that she was going to do this. I thought it was a fantastic, and I knew, automatically knew. One thing about she said, she was running and hiding, and then we were back in business trying to make a living doing we were training at the time. We were trying to get more training, more stuff. Life gets in the way, and you never have a bad feeling about, oh, Lauren or Kathy hasn't called me in 6 months. No, they had to go on their life, and we had to go on with our life. And you don't do this for pride or for gain. You do it because you think it's right. Although, admittingly, her rescue gave us business, because I was in every friggin' newspaper in every major city for about 2 or 3 months, people calling, and then we finally talked and said, yeah, we got to talk to people, otherwise they're going to be putting out the wrong story. One guy got on the phone, he said, okay, this is the story I'm going to publish tomorrow, and I'm going to read it to you. If you don't want to listen, hang up, it's going out like it is. And he said, but if you want to make a correction on it, I'll make the correction. And he read the whole story to me on the phone, and I corrected a couple of things, and it came out, and it was good. And it showed that this crew of basically five people, because we had JD, Dave, me, and then two others, Judy,
Jim.
and what's the other guy's
And
name?
Jim.
Jim. We had Jim.
Jim.
Had a mental block there. So we had this team of five that was just going out doing stuff that the people say it can't be done. But we thought we can do it, and we had enough faith that it would get done. So when Lauren called us on this, JD and me were like laughing about it. Wow, I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad Lauren's doing something. And of course, then we found out it was for a ministry package, and we even loved the idea more. And we also had the fact that Lauren wanted to get everybody together, and she got us all together. And then not long after that, JD passed away. So it was all a fantastic thing that happened for us. Now Dave lives not 45 minutes from me, so we see each other probably once a year, maybe twice a year. But JD was off in the wild blue yonder. Me and him would see each other at some of the unit reunions, and that's about it.
You've lived this, Lorne, and Don, you have seen, this happen, and you've lived your part. The movie came out, which was not really anything you had to do with Lorne, right at the time. You created the podcast. You got led to write this book. This book is out now. I have the links in Oscar Mike Rio's show post. One question I did want to ask, because in number 430, when we talked, you mentioned how key Miranda Lambert was to you as a friend and dare I say a sister. I'd be curious to know what it was like reading her forward and the book that she did for you.
Emotional.
Yeah.
This whole thing has been emotional. Reliving it and then seeing the God connections, just like Don was saying, Rick and Beverly Lambert, that's Miranda's parents. They are a big part of my story. They've known my mom since before I was born. I'm older than Miranda, before either one of us were born. That was my mom's only friends in Dallas. And when I was taken, that was the first person my mom contacted was Rick and Beverly. So they have lived this whole thing out with us, and they're still in my life today. And when we did the reunion, they went to the reunion with us in North Carolina, and just the timing, God's timing. You asked me earlier, why now? I don't know why now, but God does. And he knew that JD had 6 more months to live. None of us knew that sitting in that Airbnb around that table. But that's the goodness of God, is when you do something that you don't know what the heck you're doing. I don't know how to do a podcast and write a book, but if when you say yes, when God tells you to do something and you do it, those are the sweet gifts that He gives you. That those times, I would have missed it if I would have hesitated. I would have missed seeing and talking and getting JD's story. I would have missed it. And so I think that's important for people to realize. Don't hesitate. Just step out in faith and just do the thing. Miranda writing that forward is huge, and her being supportive and saying, I support this, I want to be a part of it, and her family being a part of it. And it also gives us a chance to tell all the pieces of the story, like Don was saying. The movie's pretty darn close, but this is all 100% of the truth of it. Even Miranda's connections of being there when I arrived in Texas in the airport, and no one would have known that she'd be some famous country singer when she was 4 years old, right?
So you've done all this. Is there, what's the path forward? Is it maybe a series or movie in your own words about how you want the story to go? What's next for you? What's next for you both?
Possibly, and that's been, and I don't know. I was just, I felt led to write the story, to get all the details, put it on paper. But since that's happened, everyone I've spoken with has said this: the movie needs to be redone. It needs to be told in your voice, meaning the whole thing, the whole redemption, the perspective of the child. So a series, a movie, I don't know. That's out of my hands. So we will see what comes next. Just getting this book out is amazing. To see it on like Target.com and Walmart and Amazon, I literally was in my closet in the floor crying. I was like, I can't believe this has happened, because it's not easy to write a book, y'all. Like, it's not
No.
easy.
Yep.
One of the things I wanted to ask during this time together, and this is just like super bonus time for me because this is all real. Like this really happened, and we're living this now. And you've given us a peek into, who Lauren is and who these people are, these true heroes who helped you out. I want to ask each one of you in your own words to tell me. What do you want people to know about Lauren's story when they read this book? What do you hope they get out of it? We'll go with Don first.
Simple for us is just that we Me and JD were on the Iranian rescue attempt back in the 80s with a plane, and we were on the plane that blew up when it caught fire. And we all got out of that alive, and just live life to the fullest. Do what you think is right. As long as you think it's right, go do it. And I tell my grandkids now, and I'm telling my great grandkids, when it comes to work, go find something you love to do. You never work a day in your life. That's the beauty of it. And we had that. And we think that's what we do now today. We still feel that way. And when Lauren said she wanted to do this, all three of us had no hesitation, no hesitation to help.
Laura, what about you?
I want someone to not only see just the miraculous things that the men did, the faith of my mom, right? That alone is amazing. But to know that it does not matter what you've gone through, what your past looks like, what your situation is that you're going through right now, God can redeem and heal and rescue any story. You have to have faith. You've got to pray. You've got to be willing to surrender some things. I spent a long time wrestling with God. I was mad that I did not have a father and I had all of these questions and these wounds. But when I finally laid that stuff down and was like, all right, God, I'm going to trust you. You rescued me out of Jordan. You can rescue me from this. And that's when my healing started. And not isolating myself and getting into community and sharing the things that I was dealing with other people, that's when my healing started. And I was no longer depressed and angry. And I could finally heal from all the things I went through. So that's what I hope people see and they read as they read this story.
How can people, closing down this, how can people purchase the book, find the book, and then people, how can people connect with you, Dom? Because you're still working, you're still, doing high speed, low drag stuff.
Well, we run a security consulting company. I got to tell people I'm no longer the point man. I'm the navigator. As you get on in the years, you're not going to be out there trying to wrestle some 26-year-old to the ground. What I could have done when I was 40 or 50. If I went to Iraq at 50 and I spent 7, 8 years there, but we're an open book. I'm easy to find. We're on the web. We have our website. And our new company name is Fordham Genis,
Okay.
but we're easy to find. And we do consulting. We still do a lot of consulting.
I will have that link in the Oscar Mike Rito show post. Lauren, what about you? You have so much going on.
Yes, so the stolen true story, kidnapped, rescued, redeemed, it is out for pre-order. Apparently, pre-order is a big deal. If people pre-order, it tells Amazon, hey, we need books because people are going to buy it. So you can find it on Amazon, Target, Barnes and Noble, all the places. It will be out September 8th. LaurenBurns.net has everything about me, has the podcast, has all of the photos of the rescue, has the book information, where I'm going and doing speaking events. That's really the best place to find me.
The truth is stranger than fiction, but in this case, the truth is also changing lives because your lives were changed through this ordeal. And one thing I remarked on in our first conversation, Lauren, was it seemed like you could have taken a very different path with this. And it seems like,
100%.
right? And it seems like, your faith, God, you've allowed God to work for you to help so many more. And your capacity to forgive is something I think we all could learn from. Just want to thank you for sharing with us.
Thank you for taking the time to have us on.
Absolutely, absolutely. We're going to have her back on. I don't think it'll be the last time, and it's going to be better and better. Don, I just, you're the kind of guys I read about before I joined the Marine Corps, and it's just been an awesome getting to know you in this way. I want to thank you both. Again, the book is stolen. It's going to be out for pre-order. You can get it anywhere books are sold. Forward by Miranda Lambert. Real story, real lives, real change. And they were here on Oscar Mike Radio. I want to thank you all for joining us. As we say on Oscar Mike Radio, we are mission in flight.
Can honor their service in a deeply personal way by sponsoring a $17 Veterans Wreath. Each wreath is more than a symbol. It's a heartfelt tribute to the heroes who served and to the families who carry their legacy. Visit wreathsacrossamerica.org to sponsor a wreath today. This isn't just a wreath. It's a personal gift to an American hero.
Thank you for listening and watching Oscar Mike Radio. where our active duty service members and veterans are in action and the mission is in flight. Oscar Mike Radio is an Oversized Load Co-Sinister One production. If you are a veteran or know a veteran who needs help, please dial 988 and press 1 for the Veterans Crisis Line.